What's up, guys? This is Tyler Lawrence Gray, and you're listening to Wolfpack on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. Not a Teen Wolf spinoff.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. This is episode number 166. Today, we're going to be talking about Wolfpack Season 1, Episode 8, the finale, Trophic Cascade. My name is Karen, and I'm joined by Natalie.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you? I know nothing.
Neither one of us know anything.
Yeah, this is not going to be a great episode because it's just going to be like, we don't know what happened.
Yeah. So yeah. I guess, you know, come along for the ride, see what crazy theories we have as per usual.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens. I don't know.
Even less answers than I was expecting.
Yeah. I mean, definitely got some answers.
Yeah. But it raised new questions that I just don't have answers to as well. Yeah. So it's like the net gain at the end of the season is definitely more questions than answers.
For sure. And we don't know for sure that we're getting a season 2. Don't know how long it'll be.
Definitely done a throw down the glove about it though.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen an episode. I've seen obviously lots of series with cliffhangers. Like, I mean, the end of the first season of Supernatural is a really good example. I don't know if you remember that, but like they're all kind of like vaguely like they've achieved something and they're back with the dad and there's like a vague sense of like, okay, we have kind of gotten things under control here. And then their car gets hit by a big truck and they're like left in limbo, like as in like, I think, well, Dean in particular is like very hurt, but they're basically it's like, oh, okay, cliffhanger. We get hit by a car and we're leaving them like injured and finding, you know, not, and it was like a demon truck driver who hit them.
Mm.
Anyway, the point is cliffhangers. Yeah, and in established shows, you know, introducing like, oh, we've sorted out that problem, but like, oh my God, here's a new one. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen something that's this messy. And I don't mean like messy as like an insult, but like inconclusive.
Yeah.
Intentionally inconclusive.
I remember actually having this conversation a fair amount of times when we were rewatching Buffy for Rewatchable in the way that like talking about Joss Whedon's arrogance of sorts in just like leaving the end of a season kind of assuming that he'll get a renewal and stuff
like
that. Yeah,
I think when you're in a certain position, that's not like necessarily like, you know, if you're like fairly confident that you're going to be able to do it, then, you know, of course, setting up something for like people to want more is definitely something that shows do. Sometimes it's arrogant. Sometimes it's just like, you know, it used to be more normal that people would leave cliffhangers and now people kind of do a more conclusive like closure sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, or even like, for example, you know, talking about like Ted Lasso, the end of the first season of Ted Lasso is obviously like, oh, we failed. We're leaving the season in a bad place. And we know that like we have to achieve something. We have to like climb back up again next year. Like it's setting up like, okay, like a story ended and it ended in a pretty bad place and we know where we would go from here, right?
Uh-huh.
And this is just not comparable to like anything, I don't know, maybe like big horror shows or like more like, I don't know, you know, I don't know where, you know, big action-y horror genre shows are ending their seasons at the moment because I'm not really following any others, but I guess the end of like Loki was quite like, oh my God, a big new problem. But this was just like, It just felt like a mid-season.
Yeah, like, I agree with that.
I cannot remember the last time I saw a season ender that was this inconclusive. I'm not sure I ever have, actually. I was just like, how are we not getting any answers here? We don't know where we've left any of the main characters. So, like, we know where we've left Garrett. But we don't know where we've left any of the kids. Like, well, we kind of vaguely know. Like, no one's got a solution. We're all in a really bad situation. So, yeah. You know.
Yeah, all of them end up being a really bad situation.
I don't know. I can't quite remember where the last shot we get of Luna, but I'm sure she's not happy.
Yeah. We will get to that, and we will definitely try to come up with some answers for you guys throughout this episode. But if you have theories about where the show could go or anything that's happened so far, please reach out to us on Twitter and Instagram at NATW Podcast, on Tumblr at notanotherteamwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, and via email at natwpodcast@gmail.com, because I'm very, very interested in hearing what you guys have to say. That said, I do want to jump right into the finale episode because there is a lot to talk about and a lot to discuss, because I feel like quite a bit of this episode was quite vague. And that starts off with the whole beginning of the episode, really. And I thought it was really interesting that the cold open of the show is basically them pulling the knife from Baron's chest. And that's it. Like, that is the shortest cold open that we've seen on the show so far.
I kind of disagree, because I kind of would take the opposite. I took that entire series of memories and hallucinations as a cold open.
I thought a cold open was supposed to be before the credits roll, before the intro credits.
Maybe that's the technical term, but yeah. Is that the only thing before the credits, is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of the feel of something happening before the credits, in terms that are like either really shocking or it's a setup situation or it's kind of more removed from what happens in the rest of the episode, I would say that the memories and hallucinations would count as that. But if a cold open is merely what is before the opening credits, then it's really just them pulling that knife out.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, I've always taken a cold open to mean something very specific, which is a contextless open.
Mm.
As in, like, just the, I wouldn't ever call something a cold open just because it's the, I would call a tea, like, for example, on, like, Supernatural, again, too, there was, like, very much a five-act structure of, like, a teaser sequence, credits, act. And the teaser sequence was sometimes totally understandable, or it was sometimes, like, if it was a case of the week, it would be like, we don't see the boys, we see like the monster attack the victim of the week kind of thing. And sometimes it's like a cold open, as in like you're thrown into the middle of something and you don't even have context for what's happening. I always took cold open as in like it's a cold, like as in we're going in knowledgeless about what this means. So from that perspective, I would take the cold open as from the knife up to the point where he kind of, we get back to the perspective of the pack carrying Baron. I would call the cold open the entire thing from the beginning, all through those hallucinations. But in terms of the teaser sequence before the credits, yes, it is very short.
Yeah.
I'm going to dig into that later, but like the slight difference between like, I would never call like a cold open just the thing before the teaser, just before the credits. It would have to be something with absolutely no context before the credits. And so in that case, if you are putting it as that way, the whole thing is,
I just jumped onto Wikipedia because I was curious if there was a technical definition of it. And it just says it is the practice of jumping directly into a story at the beginning of the show before the title sequence or opening credits are shown. Doesn't necessarily, like, it kind of has that same connotation of like giving the audience the plot as soon as possible so that they won't switch channels, basically. But I think that what happens after the credits in this episode specifically still kind of serves that purpose. So let's just jump into that because I have
it's
a lot
so
of questions.
Weird. It's so weird.
Okay. Yeah. So basically what we're doing is we're seeing Baron jump from person to person, reliving either some of their memories or having some hallucinations related to that person. So we first open up on Baron in a very rundown hospital room hooked up to an IV. He leans forward and looks into the mirror and he sees Everett's face looking back at him. The doctor and the nurse, who have previously died, walk in with Everett's parents, only it's Kristen and Garrett. And Kristen, I have to say, Sarah Michelle Gellar does an incredible Mrs. Lang.
Yeah, she's really good.
Really took on her mannerisms. And Garrett has the little glasses. He looks so cute in those glasses.
I do not understand what was happening here at all. Like, it's clearly a very warped, like, you know, Baron can clearly, like, tune into people and, you know, I don't know if he's picking up memories or what, because some of them kind of seem not correct. Like, right. Like, you know, moving on to the Blake one in a second, like, that's not, like, we don't know anything about whether that's the truth or if that was like a what-if situation.
Yeah.
With Everett, we don't know, you know, at the end of the episode he gets sectioned, like 5150'd, and I don't know if that's meant to have happened before, if he's meant to have been, like, undergoing shock therapy. That room of the hospital room with the drip and stuff, I mean, no hospital in the world would, like, have, like, dirty leaves blowing in the corner. Yeah. Like, it, no matter how shit it was, like, they would keep it as clean as possible regardless. So I'm like, this is just, like, a warped, like, fear, maybe, like, a what-if kind of, like, brewing, and he's just getting into the heads of each of the pack members. But then some of the memories seem perfectly accurate, like the one with Harlan.
Right.
It's very confusing to me, like, well, I think it's meant to be a mess, but I cannot pick it apart. I really can't.
Yeah. I definitely at first thought that this was like their worst nightmares, which kind of were based in reality, but might have been kind of overblown or, like you said, warped in some sort of way, because with Everett's and with Blake's, it very much seemed like, okay, this has happened before, maybe, but, like, there's a possibility that it's not completely accurate. And we see that Baron slash Everett is, like, super drugged, really out of it, but he is aware that his name isn't Everett. And he says something about seeing a fire, and all of a sudden, Kristen and Garrett are there as themselves. So it kind of switches halfway through. They become themselves, even their clothes change. And the nurse ends up giving Baron more of the sedative, but it's actually like silver being injected into his veins. And this is when he kind of roars in pain and Garrett pulls his gun on him. And I was like, okay, so maybe the silver from the dagger is giving him these kind of hallucinations where, like, it's sort of warping these memories that he has because he's connected with the pack. But if that's not the case, and this is at least pulled from Everett's memory, what the fuck were they trying to do to him?
I am one, you know, that he's talked about, like, a therapeutic, you know, if we're kind of taking, like, fake Mrs. Lang and Mr. Lang's comments at the start, they're like, is this normal? I don't know. He's talked about, like, having different kind of treatments. He's talked about doing microdosing. This is not microdosing of hallucinogens. It could be they've tried a lot of different things. It could be that they were sedating him for shock therapy. It could be that there's, like, something that they're doing. Yeah, basically, you know, they're like, this is way less than what we give for pain. So it's like, you know, they're trying to get him to, like, a therapeutic state to be able to do some sort of work on him. I don't know if this is meant to be, like, a warped idea of some sort of mental health treatment he's had before. I'm not familiar enough with the drug-induced mental health treatments of the United States to actually understand what the hell this is.
Yeah. I mean, the way that they were explaining it was that it was kind of just a sedative and that he had a higher resistance to the sedative. So I don't know that it was necessarily some treatment other than...
Is it the future? Is this meant to be what's going to be happening to him once he's been sectioned at the end of the episode?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I was very confused. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, I was just watching it and I'm like, this is like very confusing. I don't understand what it is. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't think that when we first met the doctor and the nurse back in the first episode, Everett didn't seem familiar with them. So the fact that
now they're dead, so it's not like they're going to be the ones doing the treatment.
Right. But if this is the past, it didn't seem like he was familiar with them, but maybe that's why they died, because they did do something to him.
Yeah, and Baron, they were an enemy from the past. Right. I don't know, it could just be that. I'm just going to say right now, this whole Baron's power is turning people into werewolves, I think that I'm calling bullshit on that. I feel like that's something any werewolf could or should be able to do, and maybe they just don't know about it yet. It's really weird to me that that is his power. So it could be that his power is more about sensing other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's onboarded a lot of weird warped memories from the people that he is around. So
yeah,
the whole he's the only one that can make werewolves, I'm a bit about. So I'm curious if there's something else.
It would be a very interesting approach if that was a particular power, because I've never really heard a story like that before. I mean, it's always just, any werewolf bites you. Yeah. It's very interesting, but I'm also really holding on to this unreliable narrator thing. I just feel because nobody really knows how werewolf rules work in this show, it's very likely that they're just wrong about things.
It does. It certainly feels like something that the werewolves themselves, including Kristen, does not actually making it up as they go along. You know, it's not we know about werewolf society from the druids. Teen Wolf. Yeah.
So the memory does switch and we get Baron in the back of a car and he sees himself as Blake. Kristen and Garrett are now taking the place of her parents. And basically Garrett, her father wants to see her mother's phone, Kristen's phone, and she refuses. He grabs for it and they get into a car accident. But we haven't heard about them getting into a car accident.
No, and as far as we know, the mother is alive. This seems like a warped memory. This seems like what really happened was a confrontation about the phone and the dad discovered the cheating. In this circumstance, it's building up to that idea means that they got a car crash and the mum died. But no, I don't think we've heard about the car crash before. It could just be an event that happened in the past that was another event. It could be that it's while she was in the hospital that her dad made Blake show her the phone. But I do not believe we've heard it. But we also haven't heard about Everett getting shock therapy or fucking dope in some sort of mental health setting. So we haven't heard about that memory either.
Yeah. But like you were saying, some of the memories seem a little less warped than others because it switches again. Baron is now Harlan, overhearing Garrett and Prisha talking about Luna killing her horse. And this is also the first one that the people are who they are meant to be. Kristen is not here at all. It actually is Garrett and Prisha. And this is also where Garrett gives Prisha bullets to protect herself. We later get confirmation that Harlan has known about Prisha since this moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that this is sort of when things start to go downhill between Harlan and Garrett.
I don't know if that's true.
It's a little bit of an assumption, but I could see this leading to that.
Because I felt like he was older than so he was 9 when the horse happened.
Mm.
And they seemed okay when he was 12, 13.
Oh, right. He was
in the forest.
Yeah.
Maybe he just was I don't know. It could have been brewing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Either way, Harlan takes Luna back to bed, telling her that she didn't do anything wrong. And this scene actually really broke my heart. They used to be so close. He was protecting her. And I thought it was really cute.
Yeah, it is nice. It made her seem like pretty fragile, to be honest. And like, you know, she's not the most normal person.
Yeah.
Let's put that out there. She's kind of, I feel like, you know, she is possibly someone that you would be protective of because she's a bit socially odd. And yeah, I guess that him being nice to her, yeah, we haven't really seen them be nice to each other as teenagers. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, switching over to Luna's memory or hallucination or what it is, this one seems warped as well because Luna is sitting in class. Of course, we see Baron as Luna. Austin turns around and asks her why she keeps drawing him. And he takes her notebook, and when he slams it back down, he slams down a picture of a wolf, which is quite interesting. As in, like,
why do you keep drawing me the wolf?
Right, yeah. And this transitions into Everett telling Baron that all the animals were scared of him, that he killed those people. And Baron says he got caught in the fire, and Everett tells him it changed you, and then stabs him with the silver knife.
So confusing.
Yeah,
for a second, I thought Everett was meant to be talking to Luna.
Mm.
And I was like, is she... What? I don't understand anything. Nothing. I don't know if this is a me problem, but I'm just like, this is just all very convoluted. And yeah, Baron has all of these fears, all of these ideas, memories, feelings from the rest of the pack that he is, I guess, taken in and is got this strange version of. And it's just very strange.
My best guess is that this is like silver poisoning. This is like a fever dream that he's having because he's dying. And so it's mixing up real life with, you know, his real life with memories from the rest of the pack because they are all connected. Maybe just putting bits and pieces, you know how like dreams just kind of don't follow. Yeah,
dream logic is definitely valid here. It's more, I'm like, how did he get the baseline information for all of those things? Like, how does he have that level of psychicness with like the packs? Potential memories like Blake's maybe with Blake and you know Everett, maybe like biting them created like a link of some kind. But I don't know, it's very strange.
It's just so interesting that Harlan's seems like straight
so up real memory. Yeah, unless him being nice to Luna is fake.
Maybe,
but it wasn't framed like that. With Austin, we know, like, well, we assume that he didn't ever really do that to Luna, like, why do you keep drawing me? It's kind of more like when he shows her the drawings she's done of him before. The scene we did see with that happening, it's confrontational, but it's not mean. And it doesn't feel like he's done that before, you know? It feels like that was the first time at that point.
The scene that I found most confusing, though, was Cyrus's because after he gets stabbed.
Like, was this real? Like, it just, how does he know this guy and why is he talking to him?
Yeah.
Was this meant to have really happened?
I don't know. That's the thing. So basically, he gets stabbed with the knife by Everett and then he wakes up in the middle of the woods sitting next to Cyrus. And he tells Cyrus that he doesn't like him and that he'll kill anyone who threatens the pack and says that he has to kill because he can't help himself. And Cyrus just straight up says, so I'm going to die and there's nothing I can do about it. Like, totally chill saying that, which is like, if this were real life, I don't think Cyrus would react that way. And then Baron says, you can run. And Cyrus runs as we hear a series of shots. Now, what I thought was really interesting about this was that this isn't one of the core four's memories, as far as we know. So Cyrus talking to, and where did he get, like, this is obviously where he got the word pack from, I'm guessing.
Like, on one hand, this could be a warped memory for Baron of Harlan and Cyrus talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, this one is definitely Cyrus addressing Baron as an individual, like not as Harlan. The other scenes, like the Everett scene, the Blake scene, it's like the other people in the scene think that Baron is that other character.
Right.
Whereas this one doesn't feel like that at all. and it's very confusing. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is so, like, useless, not useless, but like just like a pathetic attempt to make sense of it, because I just don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if there's like a clue or if it's just meant to be this dizzying, but it's really very strange.
Yeah. One of the things that I thought was most interesting about this is that during this scene, like during when those shots go off, Cyrus is with Harlan. It's in the after party, you know, episode, and they're in the woods. And Kristen is the one who told them to run. And that just sort of like jumped out to me, because Baron is the one that said, you can run. And so I didn't know if there was meant to be like a connection there. And I was kind of waiting for the end of the episode to come around and tell us that it was.
No answers for Karen.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, we don't really have any theories with that. But the next scene, we get Baron running through the forest. His shadow is a wolf, and he comes upon Harlan as a little kid. So this kind of proves, okay, yes, that wolf was definitely Baron and not one of Harlan's parents. It's the same scene we saw a few episodes ago. But this time, Garrett is there, and he shoots Baron.
It's just absolutely... I don't. It's a mess. It's clearly, you know, worst case scenarios situations for a lot of these things.
Yeah.
But like, my biggest question is like, how is Baron getting this much information onboarded? This scene, okay, he was in this scene in real life as well, so that's fine. But like, overall, I'm like, where is he getting this from? Like, where is he picking it all up, and how is it getting twisted in this way?
Yeah.
You know, dream state is all well and good, but you have to have something to base it on.
Right. Yeah, the only thing that I can think of is that somehow he's able to tap into the other pack's memories.
Yeah.
But then again, that doesn't really explain Cyrus's scene.
No, it does not.
Unless he was there actually talking to him, but...
And yeah, that was actually more real, maybe.
Yeah, except for him being like, oh, so I'm going to die and there's nothing I can do about it. Like, that's fine.
Unless there's something weird about Cyrus as well that we don't know.
Right. Yeah.
It's hard. I feel like this is a test and I'm failing.
I know. Yeah, same. Definitely. I was waiting for answers the whole time and they just never came.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah. So after getting shot, he looks down and sees the knife is in his chest. And this is when the episode finally switches back to real life, where I feel like we have a little bit more of a foothold, even though I still have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Basically, the pack takes Baron back to Everett's room. And what I thought was kind of interesting, just a mini aside, is that Harlan has a panic attack during this, and it's his own panic attack. And Everett seems angry that he's blaming him for it. I feel like this is Everett came out that we saw with his mom, this like kind of cocky, like angry person.
Yeah, like kind of arrogant in a way.
Yeah.
Doesn't vibe very good.
No, I have a bad feeling about it. And
I mean, you know, we've got obviously the end of the episode with the 5150 and the dad being absolutely horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the dad standing up, you know, the dad talking about you did this to your mother and like, yeah, okay, we hate the dad. But I still think that the whole Everett doesn't have anxiety because he's a werewolf and he's not taking his medication. I feel like that's not the message. Like, I still feel like there's something very wrong because of, like, this whole, like, he's healed now is certainly a presumption Everett and Kristen are making, but I feel like it maybe is not the narrative correctness that the show is saying. Like, I think something is wrong.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And because remember how he acted when Blake had a panic attack at the beginning of the season, and he was nice and sympathetic, mm-hmm. and like, I could, you know, and that wasn't a panic attack that she got from him, I don't think. It was just like, oh, I'm having a bad feeling. And he was nice and helpful and, you know, sympathetic. And with Harlan, he's just like, go fuck yourself, stop being annoying.
Yeah.
Maybe not in those words, but that was like the tone of it, right? Yeah,
that was the vibe for sure.
Very strange.
Luckily for them, the voice on the phone calls, and we did get confirmation from Wolfpack on Twitter that this was indeed Ian Bowen's voice. So I feel...
Yeah, but we don't know who he's actually playing. Like,
so happy.
If Ian Bowen is the modifier, for example, like...
Right.
If the voice on the phone is someone using a modifier to sound like Ian Bowen, or if Ian Bowen's going to be the actor that pops up playing whoever the voice on the phone is, we still have no idea who it is, except that it's to say that it's not Kristen.
Right.
Or Malcolm.
Right.
It's correct. Neither of those people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's interesting.
And the voice continues to be somewhat helpful by basically telling them that they have to get the silver out in order to save him.
How does he know everything? Like, does he have a spy camera or something?
I know.
Like,
it's so interesting.
Like, is he psychic? Has he got a tracker on one of them? Like, I don't understand, like, how he knows everything. So weird.
Yeah. Unless he's part of the pack and that's his power.
Being psychic.
Yeah.
Like the real dad in a hospital bed somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. The other really interesting thing he said that kind of confused me was that Blake's speed and Everett's strength come from Baron, from the bite that Baron gave them. If they let him die, they'll be normal again.
They won't be werewolves anymore.
Right. And then he also says, now you know why Baron was supposed to kill you the night of the full moon. But I still don't get this. He bit them and then transferred the power and then wanted to kill them to take it back. Like, was the bite on accident then?
I have no idea. I don't know if he was ever trying to kill them on the full moon. He certainly changed his mind about it, if he ever was.
I mean, I guess, but if the voice on the phone knows what he's talking about, he said Baron was trying to kill them the night of the full moon. But then they, obviously we learn later that they become protected.
I have no idea.
I don't know either.
I don't understand that, and I don't understand how the protection works.
I have a theory about that, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
The voice also says, I don't know why anybody would choose to be ordinary. And to me, this kind of implied that he's not, or maybe that he's just like obsessed with the supernatural.
Aspirational. Yeah. I'm wondering if that whole like doctor plot, like your doctor kidnapping them for studies thing might from the book might still be real, or if it's the dad who survived the tree being fallen on him.
Yeah. And Blake is the first and only one to say, just let Baron die, because she obviously would like to be ordinary again. But she doesn't seem to fight this, because when it switches back to this scene,
they're like, yeah.
Yeah, like it doesn't.
They're still saving him.
Yeah, and she's just chilling there. Like, she's not arguing with them.
I guess she's just not, like, participating that hard.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of liked that for her, honestly, that she was like, I'm not going to help, but, like, I'm not going to hurt either, you know?
Yeah.
I was kind of okay with that part.
I guess that kind of makes sense. She's like, let him die so that we can just get rid of all of this. I guess that makes sense. Bit harsh, but... But, yeah, it was a bit strange. And them taking Baron back to Everett's, I mean, obviously they hide him there for a fair while, but I don't know. It's very strange.
Yeah. That,
I wasn't quite sure how much time's meant to be passing in the episode, like how many days or hours they have him up there.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely spent the night in, like, the entire day at Everett. So I would assume that, you know, he pretended to go to bed early and then his parents left for work in the morning so he could kind of get away with it. But I was also like, where are your parents? Why are they not more suspicious? This seems very convenient, but that's all right. Everett also kind of comes up with this theory that Baron's thing is turning people into werewolves, which supposedly is true. We could talk about that more later, but just this assumption here, I was like, I don't know. It didn't sit right with me either. And I was kind of like surprised when it was confirmed later on.
Yeah. Like that just feels like something that would be more like all they can do. Like they all have the claws and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the fact that he has that power and it's only like one in a few werewolves or whatever that can do that. Yeah, I mean, it could be true, but it was not what I expected, to say the least. Because when Everett said we already know it can do, turn people into werewolves, I would have taken that as a given, to be honest. I wouldn't have been like, that's his special thing.
Right.
How do you guys know you can't turn people into werewolves? You haven't tried.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
Yeah. Huh. Maybe it only happens when they go into that full wolf form, though, like the actual beast. And that was brought on because he was corrupted by the fire.
I mean, that's true.
There's other stuff that comes up later, like the fact that Kristen set the fire to flush him out, that I don't know if it's meant to be narratively correct or not.
Yeah, so, I don't know either.
Yeah, so we'll get into that in a bit. But, like, I just don't understand what we're hearing that's just people saying ideas and what's actually the show being like, this is a fact.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of that in this episode.
Mm-hmm. The last thing that happens during this day in the episode is that Kristen and Garrett go to the morgue, like where they had trapped the werewolf. And Garrett basically tells her that Luna said they had nothing to do with it. And he's honest when he says he doesn't know if she's telling the truth. And it seems that, you know, they didn't call in the nest of bodies. So, like, at this point in the episode, neither one of them have called it in. She's kind of.
So it wasn't like, oh, you did it, I did it, you did it. Like,
right. Yeah. And, you know, they're kind of keeping it a secret for now. And Kristen says that she'll take care of it. And to me, this was like a little bit of an olive branch, but also like a little bit suspicious because we know more is going on.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that more in a little bit. But the next morning, Garrett, Luna, and Harlan go to the precinct. And Harlan listens to Kristen's heartbeat as she says she doesn't think Cyrus is the arsonist. And he obviously believes her because her heartbeat stays pretty steady.
But she kind of says that to him as like a challenge, like, do you know when I'm lying?
Yeah.
As in, like, maybe she's practiced getting around things like that, and maybe she's trying to prove to him that it can be faked.
Right, yeah.
That was kind of my impression, but I'm not sure.
That was my impression too, but then we never really get that coming back around by the end of this episode, so I don't know if that would be like a season 2 reveal or something. But either way, Kristen kind of, you know, throws Harlan a bone and says that you can talk to Cyrus for 5 minutes. And Cyrus admits during the scene that he did set a fire when he was 9, but claims that it was an abandoned building and no one was hurt. But because of that, they're going to think he's the arsonist and they're basically going to get him in trouble because of that. Does this, like, time period line up with anything else that's happened in the show? Like, could this be significant for another reason, like a supernatural reason?
I don't know. The only thing at all that I thought of was that even though we think that Kristen's husband died because Malcolm dropped a tree on him or whatever at 17 years ago, the way that if her story about the father and losing the son that she actually kept with her, which would be Baron, maybe that could have happened when they were all about 9 as opposed to, you know, I don't understand why she was like, obviously you're not going to tell someone like, oh, I had a whole pack of children that died in a fire. But the fact that she's like focused earlier on like one son who followed his father and died in the fire, I'm like, was that all a complete lie? Like, how long have you been a mother if your kids were like newborn babies? Like I said before, yes, losing a baby sucks, but it's different to like different kind of situation to like losing a child that you already knew, and the way that she talked about it was a child that she already knew. So I'm a bit confused.
Yeah.
But I assume that there's a record of Cyrus doing that fire that's made people think like, oh, okay, it could be something against him.
Yeah. This feels like by the end of this episode that he was merely just like a red herring, which is totally fine if that is the case, but it's just because fire has been so significant in other parts of the story with other people's histories, I'm just like, ooh, is this a clue to like another mystery that's going to be revealed, but
it's possible.
Doesn't end up being that, like, I wouldn't be too mad, because I think that they did a good job of kind of tricking us and then also making Cyrus like fairly likable and involving him in Harlan's life. So I think it was pretty well done.
Yeah.
When Harlan first goes into that office, though, he turns on the white noise machine so that nobody can hear them. If there are microphones in her office, it won't be able to pick up their conversation. However, it does cause some sort of additional like noise distortion. And later when Kristen turns it off and looks directly at Luna, this like knowing look passes between them. And Luna later says that the white noise machine helped her hear them. And she thinks Kristen knew that was true.
She didn't say that Kristen was also listening, which she very obviously was.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I kind of took this as like, you know, again, one of those concentration things, like we saw pink noise and stuff, mm-hmm. like as in like maybe it got the brain into that receptive, concentrating, slightly meditative state to be like just tuned in to let the power flow.
Right.
But Kristen was very obviously also snooping.
Yes. Yeah. I kind of like that idea though, that like maybe this will come back later when they need to concentrate more. Like Luna has this information now and Harlan does as well, so like yeah. if they're having trouble syncing up or something, maybe they, now that they have this tool at their yeah. fingertips, it'll be able to help them.
Yeah.
This is also the point in the episode where someone called in an anonymous tip about the nest of bodies, and both Kristen and Garrett look surprised, and we find out later.
Well, they both think the other one did it, I think.
Yeah.
How did you go against me like that? Like,
well, they kind of have this passing look where like Kristen like shakes her head no, like it wasn't me. Which I kind of liked that she didn't immediately like get defensive or anything.
Yeah, it also could be just like, no, don't worry about it. Like, trust me, this is the right thing to do. But I don't think she called it in either. Obviously, we know that she didn't. But
right.
They both kind of suspect that, you know, that,
yeah.
like, that they've, one of them's flipped. And not great, the 18 bodies, to be honest. Not yep. great.
It's not good. And Garrett tells the kids to go home, to trust him. And Harlan says, get Cyrus out, then I'll trust you. And the interesting part, and what kind of ends up being a theme of this episode, is that Luna looks as doubtful as Harlan these days. Like, the look that she gives her father is not great.
Well, is that before or after Prisha, she finds out that Prisha knows? It's after, I think. Yeah, Luna is wounded at this point because of the Prisha and Garrett reveal that, like, mm-hmm. you know, Harlan knew about this the whole time, that they didn't tell her, that all of these people didn't know, didn't tell her. And also, you know, she believed in Garrett and she found out this secret about Prisha and all of that. She's feeling let down by Garrett, you know, and is kind of following Harlan's lead of like, oh, now I know why my brother feels let down by Garrett.
Right.
That's kind of like her moment of just being like, oh, I've just found out that like dad kind of lied to me and all of that kind of stuff. So she is and very much like taking Harlan's side in the situation that like I'm not feeling right now that Garrett is 100% on our side, like as in like we're a little bit worried that he is kind of not trusting us to be good and all of that kind of stuff, like that level of like, oh, daddy's gonna kill me.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, just like, you know, we've been talking about Luna possibly taking a darker turn, and I just think that you really see it in this episode where she's very disappointed about everything that's going on. She's kind of giving up hope. But what I found interesting, too, was that when they leave the precinct and they get back into the car, Harlan realizes that Kristen slipped the recording that Garrett made in the pilot episode into Harlan's pocket.
So and, weird.
Yeah. And they listen to it
and cry.
Yeah, they cry. And it convinces them basically to tell Garrett about Baron.
Yeah, that Garrett loves them and that he, you know, is their father and is going to be on their side no matter what. basically.
Right.
Which is nice.
It is nice. I feel like I'm not entirely sure of Kristen's motivation there, other than, well, I guess I am, because
I feel like it's very clear at the end of the episode
we do kind of realize that she wants to be one big happy family.
Yeah, she wants a good werewolf daddy for her children. Yeah. It's very clear that she wants everyone in the loop together to be the one big happy werewolf family. And that, you know, she said before, I wish I had my kid had a dad like you. And, you know, she wants, I mean, just to jump right ahead, you know, she wants to make Garrett a werewolf so he can be their real werewolf daddy. But even if he was a human, he would have still been a good daddy. It's just she wants him to, you know, she's clearly got a little bit of werewolf brain disease. So, yeah, she, I think, wants Harlan and Luna to want to be with Garrett, because she wants to be with Garrett and bring the whole thing in together.
Yeah.
Yeah. She knows Garrett is like very, 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 very good. And that he's the right dad for her children, basically.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure how I'm feeling about that at the moment, but we'll get to that. In the meantime, you know, they do have to go back to the nest of bodies. They're wheeling them out. Kristen tells Garrett to tell her everything before the FBI gets there and she's locked out of the investigation. He asks if she trusts him and she says no, which is what we saw in the preview from last week. But the whole quote is no, not at first, not until I saw you with Harlan and Luna. And this is where we get a very interesting flashback of Kristen being a fucking creeper.
So weird.
Yeah.
I so thought that cuddling was consensual. Like, how, I mean, oh, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Anyone had any doubt at this point about who she was, it's like, you have to be really no longer doubting at this point.
But this was so interesting to me, though, because at first I was like, okay, how does she move around and touch them without anyone hearing her, especially with two werewolves in the house? But then Luna, like, seemingly wakes up while Kristen is still in bed with her, with her arm around her. But when she turns over, she's gone. So, like, was she just a projection?
I don't know, but it made me wonder, like, oh, has Luna known something the whole time? Or did she just think she had a weird hallucination or a weird sense, you know, like, oh, just a bit of a weird shiver?
Yeah.
Really strange.
I don't know. I feel like it was real, but at the same time, it just doesn't seem realistic enough. In that I'm like, is it a projection? And if so, is this something that Baron and her share, that they're able to do this?
It's very strange and I don't understand it.
Yeah. No answers on that front either. So back in reality, Baron is still out cold. He's not dead, but he's also kind of not getting better. And Everett and Blake are sitting there debating the merits of staying werewolves. And she says that if they kill somebody, it's different than when Baron killed somebody, because they didn't ask for this. And I was like, wait a second, but if Baron was born a werewolf, he didn't ask for it either.
Yeah.
So that logic was incredibly flawed to me.
Yeah, I think, you know, she's talking about the fact that, you know, they were, like, held hostage by that werewolf instinct when they tried to attack Garrett. And they're like, for her, it's like, well, this was totally forced on us. And I guess kind of like he forced that on them, I guess, by biting them. But, him being born a werewolf also doesn't apply in that situation. Like, it is a bit weird.
Right. But I thought the actual, like, disagreement that they had was very interesting, because Blake's worry is that they could hurt the people that they love, whereas Everett feels like they can protect the people that they love.
Yeah. I mean, they're both valid.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Neither is wrong.
I think that Blake probably has more reason to be scared of flipping out at the people that she loves. Like, she loves both her father and Danny more than Everett loves his parents.
Yeah.
So
Like, Everett would just be talking about protecting the pack, like everyone in it together, whereas Blake is talking about a wider family than that, I think.
Right, yeah. And I think that it's really important to remember, too, that Everett's gotten this huge confidence boost since he hasn't been experiencing anxiety.
Slightly off.
Yeah. Right. And so I feel like he's just like juiced up on all of this and isn't really like thinking correctly. Like, he's only seeing the good side of it right now because that's kind of all he's really experiencing at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. He's like, oh, I love being a superhero.
Right.
Like, yeah. I think that's probably very, very accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. And despite all of this, a little bit later, Blake brings Danny over to Everett's, even though they just had a discussion about her being afraid of hurting him and, you know, yeah, all of that. But she didn't really have a choice. And Danny refuses to go into the room with Baron and keeps repeating the phrase fear and pain over and over, which we've obviously heard previously. And we get a little bit of an insight into what's been going on, because Danny says that Kristen shook his hand that night in the parking lot, or sorry, in the parking garage. Just
parking like garage, not yeah, parking lot.
Oh, sorry. just like she shook Everett and Blake's hands, and Everett thinks that she marked them as safe.
From Baron. Like, as yes, don't attack this person.
Yeah. This was another thing that I was like, that's such an assumption, because shaking somebody's hand is like very normal.
Maybe you go back and track whether she avoids doing it with people if she doesn't like.
Maybe, yeah. But I know you mentioned earlier that like.
But also maybe it has to be with intent, like as in like she has right, to activate her healing power or whatever to put a bit of a barrier on them, like a, you know, some sort of magic.
That's a
good. It's just like just touching anything is whatever, but she has to be like with her healing power.
Yeah. That's a good point about like maybe it being a healing thing, like connecting that. I think that's very interesting. My takeaway from this was like, if she is sort of like the alpha or the matriarch or something, or even if she's not, you know, animals often like rub themselves on people or not.
Yeah,
people,
like a, I mean,
people
marking,
and yeah, places and other animals to like, yeah, give them a marking. This was kind of just what I took away from that.
That could be possible. Yeah, but it could be possible that, you know, to give a bit of that well of magic, she has to do it with intent and she's mm-hmm, not doing it to everyone in the world that she touches.
Yeah. Imagine if she had to like rub her face on people instead.
Just a bit of a snuggle.
Yes. Yeah. That would be very awkward. Yeah. Oh, it's a good thing it's a handshake. Okay, so jumping back to, you know, Garrett and all of them, this is when everybody kind of comes together in the episode. So Harlan and Luna bring Garrett to Everett's and they take Baron to the hospital. And Blake decides not to go. She doesn't care if Baron dies. And we kind of already talked about that.
She doesn't want to be an active participant in his saving.
Right,
basically.
Exactly. So everybody yeah, leaves to take him to the hospital. She's left there waiting for her dad, who does eventually show up with Kristen and social services. And basically, he screwed up and they're going to be separated.
Is that like financially? Then, like, can they just do that? Just take someone's kids because they're poor?
I mean, if they can't properly take care of them, yes.
Is there something else here that's like that he's done that like is he being charged with a crime? Like,
yeah, I don't know if.
Why is Kristen a part of this? Is this to do with the arson investigation?
Or maybe she just wanted to tell.
Is it to do with finding Phoebe in the bathtub?
That's possible. I mean, even if it wasn't his fault, like.
Yeah.
I could see them maybe looking into the situation and then deciding that this was the case.
Yeah.
At first I thought this was like between this and what happens to Everett, like I thought this was like some weird alternate reality, like nightmare situation.
I don't know. It's very strange. But everyone's left in a bad place. Yeah. Like, yeah, like the, you know, we don't exactly know what this is going to mean, like for Blake, whether she will be put into her foster care or if Danny's getting taken away because she's actually in trouble and is getting taken into, like, juvenile, like, arrest. I mean, we see Harlan arrested at the end as well, but it's very confusing to me as to what's happening here and I mean, whether this is also, like, is something influencing these people, like the social services,
the cop, like Zhang, because Zhang's really determined to get Harlan. Yeah. I don't know, like Blake's father or Everett's father is something like in their ear trying to weaken the kids, as in like trying to do things that mean, you know, someone feeding the people in power some level of knowledge or drive, being like, go get that kid and separate them from the other kids, you know, go get that kid and separate them from the other kids, because it's kind of weird.
I think that would be a really interesting take on it. I think that could add another element to season two if we end up going there. Yeah. I think, though, that at least from his perspective, the dad seemed very convinced that it was his fault that this was happening.
Yeah.
So I don't.
It could be that his finances, or I don't know. Again, are we missing something? Are we forgetting something that occurred? That, you know, were they at threat of this to be separated before? I feel like it was mentioned that there was threat of it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess we'll just have to see where that ends up going. And he's going to try to appeal to make sure that they're not separated. But for right now, like, that is basically the plan. And then Kristen comes in and asks Blake if she wants Danny to change, to be like her. And Blake says she doesn't. And Kristen says she knows she's lying. Even Harlan would know you're lying without even listening to your heart.
So this is very harsh. I think it's also very realistic in terms of, like, a lot of kids who are dealing with other family members with special needs, like, especially when they're child age, and I'm sure parents of special needs kids as well, can't admit, you know, I'm sure most of them have to admit under pressure that they have, like, wished for times when it wasn't like that, or that it was easier, you know, that they want the person to not be this kind of difficult situation, that they could just be like quote-unquote normal and not be something that the person has to be responsible for or dragged down by or anything like that. So I think that that kind of like pressure of like, you know, I know that you really think this is, that is very realistic. I also think that Kristen talking about like making Danny a werewolf, healing his autism, is like a big sign that Kristen is a little warped in the head.
Right. Yeah.
Like something's very wrong with, like, you know, she's talking about her skin, right? And Everett's anxiety. And we already know that the anxiety healing is a little bit sus, because it's not like these people don't, werewolf people don't have problems. So the idea that, you know, oh, yeah, let's all be one happy family, we'll just bite Danny and then he won't have autism anymore. You know, I don't think the show is saying that is good, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. But I did find this scene very, very interesting because, like you said, I think it was harsh but realistic. I know a couple of people who have autistic children, and it's just a reality of the situation. I also remember watching a documentary from Louis Theroux about parents of kids with, I don't remember if it was autism specifically or if it was like a kind of a spectrum thing where like it was all different sort of like mental illnesses and stuff. And some of them would be like, yeah, I wouldn't change anything. This is my kid. I love them. Take it or leave it. It's hard some days, but like, this is reality. Why like try thinking
about it when it's not going to change?
And other ones are like, yeah, I would 100% change it. It's awful. I don't want my kid to go through that. It takes its toll on me. Like, it's a very, very realistic conversation to have. So I did kind of appreciate that the show went in that direction. However, what I thought was stupid on Kristen's part was this implication that Blake, the one person in the pack who doesn't want to be a werewolf, would consider having her brother turned into a werewolf.
I guess it's like from Kristen's perspective, there's a little bit of like she can feel Blake pulling away and she's like, oh, but what if it could make Danny better? If if it could be together. So I think that is a possibility, but I also don't think Kristen, this is like, I think that Kristen's mind's a bit warped, to be honest, as we're going to discover more. So,
yes.
Yeah.
I agree with that. At the hospital, Garrett tells the other three kids to stay out of it. Just go home. Like, you don't need to be here. You don't need to be tied to Baron. But Everett really just can't leave him behind. And Harlan won't leave Everett, which I really liked. It's actually Luna who says that they never were a pack. And I think even Harlan looks surprised to hear her say this.
Yeah, why do you think she's feeling so let down at this point?
I think she's fought so hard for this and nothing is going her way. Maybe it's just like it's finally taking its toll on her.
Yeah, maybe it's also, you know, she found out, like, you know, who did it, Baron, and, like, you know, that all these people are, you know, that we might lose Everett and Blake doesn't even want it. Like, this idea of togetherness is, like, not as pure and lovely as I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like she thought all of her problems would be solved if she just had friends, if she just had a pack. Whereas everything just keeps going to hell. So maybe that was not the right choice for her.
Yeah.
But Harlan goes to talk to his dad, and Everett, left alone in the waiting room, is ambushed by his father, who says that he's a danger to others for threatening his mom. And he brings up, you know, Baron getting stabbed and the blood all over his room and everything. So he's now going to be held for 72 hours.
But the way the dad escalates also doesn't seem quite hinged.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, it's kind of like the dad has the power in this situation. The dad has the legal right to do this and to force it. But, you know, I feel like the mental health professionals could be like, well, the man is also unstable. So
yeah.
What's going on there?
Look, I get where he's coming from to an extent. Like, realistically, if my son was hiding a dying boy in his room, like, I would be very concerned. But he was like, you ripped the key out of my mother's hand.
So stupid. Not stupid of the show, but, like, this man is clearly, I felt like it was a really clear marker of, like, that whole abusive parent element of, like, the compliant parent will feed the abuse of the abusive parent kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, Ellie, you know, yes, Everett got quite stern and was like forceful, but it was like not that dramatic. It was just like, okay, oh, he talked back to her, like, big fucking deal, you know, like, it's kind of, and the fact that she played up like, oh, he was going to hit me, and like, that's crazy. Like, these people are.
Did you mention that she hit him a few days ago? No, I don't think you did.
Yeah, it's so strange.
Yeah.
Those parents are, you know, I feel like we need to know what's going on with the dad, and we haven't heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This, you know, is really interesting because this is the last we see of Everett in this episode.
Yeah. And, yeah. So we're just leaving him in a bad place.
Right. And so in the preview, when we saw this, we kind of assumed what was going to happen. I really thought that was going to be like the beginning of the episode and then they would like break him out of somewhere, like by the end, you know, they would be together, not by the end, they're all separated. This season really leaves on a down note.
Yes, it do. It really, yes, it do. It really just ends with, oh, everyone's separated or everyone's, you know, on a, you know, bad place, but this is so extreme.
Right.
Yeah, it just seems like a very strange thing to have done, to have absolutely no conclusive satisfaction. Like, there's nothing, do you feel satisfied by anything in this episode?
I feel satisfied by knowing what's going on with Kristen.
Was the mother. Yeah.
But like, really, you're right. Like, that's kind of it. Everything else is like you said, this would be a great mid-season finale where like they take a month off or something and you can't wait for the show to come back.
Yeah. This feels like has to be an active choice. Like an active choice to be like, we're going to leave it like this and say, hey, but like our story is like so not done.
Right.
And that is very bold. But like, how long will we have to wait to find out?
I know. I mean, typically it's going to be like a talking, year.
At least. Yeah. If it keeps people talking and engaged, then that's more of a reason for Paramount to get involved. But on the flip side, if people weren't watching week to week and you're like, oh, go and watch this show, just binge this show, Wolfpack, to like a friend. I guess like unless you're like, don't tell them the ending is like really difficult. You know, you'd hope it would leave every new viewer wanting more, right? Mm-hmm. You'd hope that was the solution. But yeah, they clearly had to choose at a point to pivot one way or another, like to give us something or to give us nothing in terms of the a conclusion, and they went with nothing.
They chose nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I don't know how I want that to end yet, so I'm just not going to deal with it. I'm sure they do know where it's going to go from here because they clearly had the confidence to just go for it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like they have a direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like that's not always the case when a show does end like all wrapped up, because it's then like, okay, in the next season, let's introduce a new problem with a new arc that'll be over that season long, however long that season is.
Yeah.
Whereas this feels like it'll be a continued story that they already know what needs to be addressed in season two.
Yeah, theoretically, I'm into that. I'm into, like, a long game.
Mm-hmm.
But not having any kind of promise of renewal when making it and leaving it at this point, like, that's very much, like, very daring,
I guess. Yeah, I agree. I would actually be quite surprised if they didn't renew the show, just because they knew going into season one how it was going to end.
Yeah, and that's true. They must have had a little bit of, like, you know, like, yeah, we think it'll probably be fine.
Right. And with Paramount's deal with Jeff, like, it was probably a whole discussion. So
yeah, that's true.
Hopefully we get news sooner rather than later that it gets a season two, and then we won't have to worry about it at all.
Yeah, well, we'll wait, but we can wait knowing that we may get an answer. Yeah. But, you know, maybe we won't. Who knows?
We'll have to wait till season six. Just kidding. That would be awful. Please don't do that to us. Okay, so Everett's, you know, taken away. And when Harlan comes back, he runs into Cody, who says that his dad is the one who hooks him up with all of his drugs. And we find out that his dad is Malcolm, because Cody's last name is Malcolm. We were under the assumption that Malcolm was Gideon Emery's first name, right?
I didn't really think about it, to be honest.
I just assumed that it was. Fine. So I thought it was actually really
he
clever.
He did call Cyrus's father Nyx when they were talking about it. Yeah, I can see the twist. I wasn't thrown, but yeah, it works.
It shocked me. Like, I was like, oh, like, that's an interesting connection there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, before Harlan can do anything, Jang arrests him for the murder of Officer Miller.
Fun! It really sounds like he really wanted to get Harlan. You know, I remember he was obviously at the beginning of the season. We had Officer Miller roughing up Harlan, and it felt like that both Jang and Kristen were like against that kind of handling of a teenager. Right. Even though Jang's been difficult, it did feel like he was at Kristen's side there.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's like real keen. He's like, I finally got you, or whatever he says. Like, what is going on there?
I don't know. And this kind of lends credence to your theory that maybe something else is going on here, that they're kind of influenced by somebody or something, because this doesn't really make sense to me. Like, sure, Officer Miller was last seen at his house. That's where his car is and everything. But, like, do you have any evidence that it was Harlan who did it? Like, maybe Harlan has motive, but do you have any evidence at all that he was the one that did it? And besides that, Miller's body was taken to that construction site. It was thrown in with the
other bodies. So why just him and not the 18 other people?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
It feels like maybe something's telling all of these people, like some little brain worm is being like, hey, get this kid out of here, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in whatever way, like, you know, Everett and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know, because Jang came in so angry, so sure, and it just didn't really make sense to me. But Malcolm is indeed a bad guy because he's the one who takes Baron to go meet his mother. And he says that his mother started the wildfire because it was the only way to bring him out of hiding. He says she killed all those people just to find you. And then we get a flashback of Baron running away from the fire. He's completely human. And then he kind of becomes consumed. And we assume that he transforms as well.
A lot of questions here.
Yeah.
Number one, do you think Kristen set the fire?
I kind of feel like it's a possibility just because she's a little bit nuts.
I think it's possible. And like, you know, we said, she says a few things later on, and we talked about it before, about the possibility that someone was doing some kind of land renewal, some spiritual land renewal. And she talks about Yellowstone and it's so funny for me to hear that Garrett later, he's like, the elk couldn't protect themselves. That was the point. The point was to naturally cut down the deer population. Anyway, we'll get into that in a second. It sounds like she wants to restore the balance of a predator like this to the land of California, or just for her own selfish reasons. So her lighting the fire is not outside the possibility for me. Mm. Number two, was Baron living as a normal wolf the whole time in the forest, not a warped werewolf, just a normal wolf? If so, why?
I feel like it's possible that yes, because, I mean, when we see the flashback of him with young Harlan, like, he's a wolf. He's just a regular, plain old wolf. So it's possible that maybe, you know, Harlan and Luna were rescued, but Baron never was, and he just grew up on his own in the forest. And for whatever reason, Kristen just couldn't find him. Malcolm mentions that she's been living as a human for too long. She's not as strong as she was. Maybe she just, like, wasn't able to find him.
It's weird, but yeah. So the fact that he steals Baron and he takes Baron to meet Kristen so that he can attack Kristen. The main thing I do not understand is whether the show is saying Kristen lit the fire, or whether this warped man, Malcolm, is saying it, and it's not true. Right. I think it's very possible, but I did not feel like the episode told me for sure what the truth is.
Yeah. I don't trust a lot of the times what the show is telling us. And yeah, I think that it's supposed to be that way because of that whole opening sequence, too. Like, there's just no way that you can know for sure what parts of that are memory, what parts are hallucinations, what parts are some weird combination of both.
Yeah, I don't understand how they keep it straight in their head, the people creating it. Like, I don't understand. I'm sure they know the truth. They've got, like, the objective truth of all of these events.
Right.
And then, like, who thinks what about what and what motive they have for saying it or thinking it. But it is very difficult.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. But unfortunately, we don't really find out more about this. We don't get confirmation from Kristen or anything. But Garrett at the hospital cannot find Baron, and there's only a helmet with Depot 45 kind of written on the inside of it. And he's like, does this mean anything to you, to Kristen? She says yes, and she says, do you trust me? And so they end up getting into a shootout with Malcolm at Depot 45, where all the fire trucks are and stuff. That was their group that they were in. Kristen, you know, in the middle of this gunfight, very poor timing, gets a phone call from the man on the phone. So this confirms that it wasn't her, and it also confirms that it wasn't Malcolm, which I was, like, a little surprised by. I was like, oh, okay, the voice on the phone is calling her now. And we also find out that the voice is the one who called the anonymous tip about the bodies.
So I wonder if he's been calling her for a while, like if this is the first time
she did not seem surprised.
No, maybe he told her to go and look for the, you know, the marks in the tree when she goes to look for the Officer Miller. You know how we're like, she's not going to get involved. It's not my problem what happened to that guy, but then she shows up anyway.
Right, yeah.
Maybe the guy called her. So if the voice isn't her and it's not Malcolm, because they're all in the room together,
mm-hmm.
who the fuck is it, Karen?
I mean, I'm just leaning further and further toward it being their real father.
Yeah.
Unless they bring in like a totally new element that we just, there's no way to guess like who it actually is. But
yeah,
because he also says, you think you made them a pack? They wouldn't be alive without me. And I'm still helping them, which I was like, okay, that feels like bitter ex. You know, like he kind of knows what Kristen wants, what she's up to, and he's trying to be like the better parent, like the cooler parent.
Yeah. Wild card. Maybe it's Cyrus's
fault. Maybe.
Not dead. But like, how is he still helping them, and how is calling Garrett first? I think I might have missed something here. He's like, call Garrett first. And I'm like, okay.
I assume that he called Garrett and told him everything he knew about Kristen. Because at that point, Garrett knows,
in the story?
Right now, right after.
But they went to the
whole sequence, and I'm still
helping. I guess Kristen arrived at 4. I thought Kristen and Garrett came to 45 together, but I guess she came in on her own first.
Yeah, that wasn't super clear to me because I couldn't tell if she was like, trust me, go to this place and help me kill this guy, or trust me, I'm going to go do this thing, you wait for me. Like, they don't really answer that question.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but either way, I also thought of like, what if it's another werewolf puppy? Like, what if it's another brother on the phone or something like that?
Yeah.
Could be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, the voice called Garrett. Garrett now knows Kristen's a werewolf. He is definitely keeping her within his sights. And he does bring Baron to her, but like I said, keeps his gun on her the whole time. She does admit that she's their mother and that only the pack can turn Baron human again. So there is hope that
he is human.
But I think the implication is that he will turn back into that monster at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Unless the
pack. So, like, can a stop good it. Normal werewolf should just be a human who sometimes gets glowy eyes and never transforms into that monster.
Yeah.
And that's what they're shooting for.
But we saw that. She can turn into a wolf. Her mate could turn into a wolf. They were wolf puppies. So there's got to be like some transformation there.
Yeah. Like when they say human, do they mean that kind of safe werewolf version? Or do they mean like no werewolf
at
all? As in like stop him being that big monster without control of himself.
Right. That's what I assumed.
I don't understand why the pack can do it and Kristen isn't a part of that, but sure.
Yeah. She confirms that Baron does have the power of transmutation, aka he can bite people and turn them into werewolves.
Sure.
Yeah. And she has the power to heal.
Yeah.
I thought it would have been really cool if she had resistance to silver and like pulled it out of him. And then when Malcolm tried to kill her, like it wouldn't do anything. I was really hoping that was going to be what it was.
Okay.
It would have been a cool twist. Mm-hmm. But after this little conversation where Malcolm's definitely still stalking them, Malcolm does end up attacking and Kristen kicks his ass. And I got such Buffy vibes from this.
It was a good fight.
It was,
I enjoyed that. You know, I enjoyed the element that had a bit more of an animalistic fight to it as well, you know, like with the wolves. So, you know, don't know, you know, what kind of training Sarah Michelle Gellar's doing or if she has a stunt double. Does she still use the same stunt double from a long time ago? Or like, but yeah, I enjoyed it. And yeah, I mean, there's so much we don't know that I'm just kind of like, what have you been doing this whole time? Like, what is going on?
Yeah. I did notice sometimes when it was her stunt double, and I'm pretty sure I read not too long ago that Sarah Michelle Gellar does have some, like, actual training in, like, martial arts. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think she is, like, quite capable of doing some of that herself, but I did notice, like, you could tell when it's like a wig or sometimes when you just know that it's like somebody else, but
I wasn't really looking for it, to be honest.
That's what I always look for.
Really? Do you?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And because I love action sequences and stunt choreography, that I always like to figure out, like, oh, is the actor doing this? Like, do we actually see shots of their face, or is a stunt double? When do they use a stunt double versus letting the actor do those things? Like, oh yeah, I usually like super analyze those scenes.
That's so funny to me as well. I mean, I assume you don't do that with other scenes where people might have body doubles. Like, do you do that with sex scenes?
No, I don't think I think about it as much, but I'd be lying if I said that I, you know, because when you watch stuff like that and you're analyzing things all the time and like this is part of your job to look at those things, I can't help but think like, oh, how did they make this scene? Like, how did they get this certain shot or something? And I am curious sometimes, like with things like that, is like, oh, are we not seeing their faces at all? That's so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think about this a lot with Ted Lasso and the football because very little of it is doubles. They have a lot of really good players who are extras. Like, they've got a lot of really good people who are, like, very – the lead cast didn't have a football audition. Like, people like Roy and Jamie, they didn't have an audition to be like, I can play. Basically, all of the other cast members are cast because they're, like, very, very good / semi-pro, and always the opposition team of, like, faceless people. But Phil Dunster does all his football stunts, and they're really good. Like, as in, there's no double for him. He can play to a degree that they get some really, really good shots that make it look, like, cool. Like, and so just stuff like that, like any kind of action, but I don't really, I don't know, I don't, with fights, it usually is just moving too fast for me to tell.
Yeah, that's fair. What I thought was funny here too is that Garrett basically shoots Malcolm.
Yeah, so what happened there? He shot him in the arm or something?
I guess so. Yeah.
Or did he shoot? He didn't shoot. I thought maybe he was shooting to get Kristen, like to wing her, but it wasn't that. I don't really quite follow. Was it just to like startle her?
I think so, and to like incapacitate him to some extent. I thought that he shot to kill him at first. But that is definitely not the case. He is still alive, which is a good thing, I guess.
I guess we'll get more information from him later.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But speaking of information, the last little bit of this episode is the definition of the episode title, which is trophic cascade. Basically, when a predator has an impact on an ecosystem, the predator keeps the prey in check, and it's what she wants to do. She wants to have her family, she wants to have the pack in order to keep other
society.
Yeah, society in check, humans in check, like bad
maybe
people
just
in
the
check.
Forest. I don't know, like. What she's talking about with Yellowstone and changing the course of the rivers, that's all completely true. But it was weird because Garrett's response framed it like, oh my God, these predators came in and fucked things up. Whereas that's absolutely not the case. Like, that was the exact intention of the wolves returning to Yellowstone, was to basically cut down the level of, and I mean, it wasn't that many wolves that were released, but to cut down the level of breeding deer and like hoofed animals, in which case it strengthened the topsoil, like, and created and, you know, closed up some passageways that like the elk made from like bashing through forests. Like, the less there were, the more the topsoil was renewed, the more plants grew back and insects. Like, it was a big part of it was getting barren from plant life. And so it was just like having the natural predators meant to cut down the amount of large prey animals like deer that ruin the ground is a big part of why they did it. And it was just weird to me that they had Garrett frame it like the elk couldn't defend themselves. Like, it was like, I guess he is making a comparison to human, but the Yellowstone Project was completely intentional in that way. Right. So it just kind of was a funny little twist to me.
Yeah.
But like, you know, well, is Kristen's aim the right thing ecologically or not?
It's so, because who is her prey though? You know, like that's that, I mean, people like Malcolm maybe, but it's not like Malcolm was necessarily a bad guy before this. Like he was a firefighter, like maybe he was shitty or something, but he's kind of framed as a hero prior to meeting.
I don't know. I can't really work out whether the aim that she has here is like psychotic and personal, or whether it is she has a bigger aim that is actually like, we're going to make the land better. We want to all go out into the forest and live like wolves and stop forest fires and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, or if she's making this comparison about human society.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I just get like such an unhinged vibe from her. And like near the end, I was like, okay, there's some logic behind this, but at the same time, I just don't trust that she has other people's best intentions in mind, you know? Like, it seems like it's all very personal. And if she is the one who set the fire, she doesn't care who dies or what is ruined in the process of getting her family back. And that's dangerous.
I found it interesting as well. Like, Baron didn't really recognize her. And he was like, I don't trust you either. Like, you know, Baron's not on board with Mommy, like,
yeah,
at all.
Well, and that's so interesting because this last part of the episode is that she basically tells Garrett she wants her family back and she wants to co-parent with him. She says that all the kids can have the lives that they want and Garrett can be the father Harlan has always wanted once Baron turns him into a werewolf. Baron's eyes light up. Like,
he's like, oh, yeah, okay, I can do that. Yeah,
like, I'll do that, whatever. Whereas, like, 2 seconds ago, he didn't trust Kristen.
Maybe he can't control it.
That's what I was wondering.
Like, because she's healed him and he's not weak. Like, the fact that he's healed, maybe he just gets the urge again. It's weird. That plan is a weird plan, Kristen. It's very strange. And I think that the kids would fight for Garrett's right to not be a werewolf, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it'll be like Twilight where he takes her up on it.
Oh, my gosh. Like
Bella Swan becoming a vampire, which I thought was very strange. I mean, one of the many strange things about Twilight. But anyway.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the finale.
So weird. I don't know what to tell you. It's like, definitely, you know, do you think that Garrett will accept the bite or will it be forced upon him? Or do you think he'll be able to get away?
I feel like so much of his life has been worried about the danger of werewolves that it would be out of character for him to want just this.
Become one.
But maybe that's because he's human and he doesn't really, you know, stand a chance unless he has silver bullets. But at the same time, he looked a little hopeful at the end. Like, he looked like he was at least thinking about it.
Yeah, I don't know. It was really confusing. I don't know what to think of that. I wasn't expecting it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just something that they, it just kind of made me think Kristen's fully crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, you think that she's like picking out a new mate or whatever for herself.
It seems like it. But I mean, at the same time, like, how genuine is that? Is she just building a pack to increase her strength because there's something else out there?
I really don't know.
I don't either.
It's very strange. Yeah. I don't know. Do you have any other theories about what's going to happen to any of the other kids at the moment?
Not really, because my head is just spinning. I don't know where they could go with this. I think that everybody's going to be okay in the end. Obviously, it's not like I think that Harlan's going to be charged with murder, but the, you know, how he gets out of that is going to be very interesting. So we'll just have to see. I did want to say,
maybe Cyrus and Harlan can be in jail together.
Maybe. Aww. Not the ideal situation for them, but, you know.
Worked on Shameless. very different situation. Anyway.
But I did want to say, you know, now that we're wrapping up and everything, our kind of plans going forward for Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, because we've watched the Teen Wolf movie and talked about it a little bit. We've watched the first season of Wolfpack and discussed it. I definitely want to have like an overall thoughts episode slash like all the questions that we have for season two once we get a little bit more time to like chew on what we saw in the finale and kind of connect it with other things, because I have a feeling like, you know, what questions do we want answered in season two? I have a feeling we have a lot of them.
Yeah, I would have to really go through and be like, what about that? What about that? Like,
yeah,
really think about it, to be honest, because at the moment I don't have a clue.
I know. And then we also talked about, you know, talking about the Teen Wolf movie again, since we did our initial reactions and then...
Yeah, we'll have to definitely go over a few different parts of that and what you've got in mind after basically having some reflection on it, or even hearing about like what fans have, how they've responded to it in that time, you know, like the things that have ended up being working for people or not working for people, where it could possibly go.
Yeah.
I don't know when we might hear more about either project, either the Teen Wolf universe or more Wolfpack. We really don't know. Do you think about around May or something? Like, when are things renewed in streaming world? Is there like any schedule to that at all?
I'm not entirely sure. And part of me wonders, you know, since streaming has a little bit looser guidelines and stuff, if it'll just be like whenever they want to. I don't know.
Probably.
When they had time to look at the numbers and to see that it's worth investing in another season or another movie.
Getting a lot of good reviews in magazines and stuff. Like a lot of like people are like, hey, like this is actually really good. Or like, hey, like especially for Sarah Michelle Gellar being like, hey, her show is actually good. It's just that people don't really know about Paramount Plus that much.
Right.
So we'll say the code that we had for Paramount Plus discount is still available until the 31st of March. There's a lot of other stuff on Paramount Plus that is kind of like they're building up more things that they have available for various, you know, various things that people may or may not be interested in. But if you're listening to this before 31st March, so March 31, which is like in about, I guess, 2 weeks from now, and you want to check it out on Paramount Plus, you can do that. There's a code, the pack is back, all caps, and it'll get you a free 30-day trial for Wolfpack, or Wolf for Paramount Plus in general, but it's with the aim of promoting Wolfpack. So if you haven't really got to watch it, or if you're just like listening to this and haven't seen it, which might be weird, or if you just like want to show it to someone else, you can get 30 days free on Paramount Plus to see if like the amount of content there is going to be good for you once you've got it. So you can give that a go, and also just watch the Teen Wolf movie again if you had it and then let it expire.
Yeah. So there's definitely more episodes of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast coming up. We will let you guys know what exactly they are, but I think we'll be talking about Wolfpack again. We'll definitely be talking about the Teen Wolf movie again.
Yeah.
So we're not going away for another however many years in between projects. I definitely have more thoughts on both of those. So please write into us. Let us know what you thought about everything. If you have questions, especially, or your own theories, we'll read them out and discuss them on air. We'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, that would be cool. I think it would be good to do a Teen Wolf movie episode where it's literally, if people want to, if they're interested enough, they send us their questions, like as in either for us to explain, like, I didn't understand what was going on here, or just our opinions, like what did you think of Parrish and Malia, you know, that kind of thing. Like if people want to do Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, write in about the Teen Wolf movie and ask for our opinions on things, and also for Wolfpack if you're following along. But the Teen Wolf movie, I think there'll be a lot of former listeners who may be listening again and who can say, you know, we can take questions on social media and do a whole list of like responses to people's questions should they want to do it.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. But until then, this has been us, and we will talk to you again soon.
At a time in the future.
Yes.
Possibly not next week, but in the future.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, yay. I know nothing.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.